This is the Daily Radio Ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Ephesians. Now, here's Pastor Sandy with the conclusion of his message entitled Walk in Love in the book of Ephesians, chapter 5.
Are we imitating God in walking in love, or are we imitating the world and walking in lust? Well, this is what Paul asks us in verse 3. He's helped us understand what love is, but now he's going to define what love is not. He's going to uncover love's counterfeit, lust. He writes this, "But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as is fitting for saints." In this verse, just as he does with love, Paul uses three broad terms, three loaded terms to define lust. Fornication is the Greek word porneia, from which we get our word pornography. In the first century, it was sort of a catch-all term for all kinds of illicit sexual activity. Uncleanness, it means impurity. It's the same kind of general prohibition. It really voids any sex outside of marriage. And then covetousness or greedy. In this context, it's the greed. It's the desire to want to use someone else's body for your own gratification. You see, these terms were all-encompassing terms. They were sort of a catch-all term. Included in these prohibitions would be prohibitions against premarital sex and adultery and homosexuality, and spouse swapping, and prostitution, and incest, and strip clubs, and hookups, and pornography, and cyber sex, and phone sex, and sexting, and friends with benefits, etc., etc., etc. In other words, anything that feeds a person's sexual appetites apart from marriage, according to Paul, isn't fitting for a Christian. It shouldn't even be named among you. But Pastor Sandy, are you serious? Man, we're living in the 21st century. Haven't you heard anything goes? What could be wrong with two consenting adults going to bed together? Well, can I remind you of something? Do you realize who created sex in the first place? Don't forget, it was God's idea. Hugh Hefner didn't create sex. Dr. Ruth didn't create sex. Sex was God's idea. He created it. God designed it for bonding and for pleasure. And this means that if God chooses, he can restrict the use of sex. That's well within his right to do so. And what's more, if he does, it's certainly because he has a good reason. Ben Franklin once said, "Sin is not hurtful because it's forbidden. It is forbidden because it's hurtful." The boundaries that God put around sex aren't intended to spoil our fun. They're drawn for our protection. You know, what our culture fails to appreciate is that sex is more than an animalistic instinct. It's more than just a biological function. Human sexuality carries spiritual connotations. Sex creates emotional bonds. It glues two people together in a spiritual way. An unexpected oneness occurs. Listen to the words of a woman named Ingrid. She writes, "There were a number of things I hadn't counted on. Things which none of my friends who wanted to be free had counted on. When love didn't turn out as planned, there was a peculiar pain that I refused to acknowledge. A pain of separation that had not been part of the design. I didn't count on the power of sex. I didn't realize that sex made a difference. That it transformed everything for me. And for most women, making love with a man several times created unpredictable bonds. I didn't realize physical intimacy had unknown properties, that it created deepening needs and bursts of possessiveness and jealousy. I didn't realize that love could reverse itself, be withdrawn, and that the consequences of such withdrawal could be so powerful as to crush one's own potential for feeling. I didn't realize that there actually was such a thing as falling apart over the loss of love." Very revealing. You need to realize God created sex for marriage. He designed it as a super glue. What it glues is supposed to stay. And once it's glued, you don't pull it apart and it break away easily. It's not like you pull along the dotted lines. No, once it's been super glued, when you pull it apart, it rips and it tears in places that were never meant to be torn. It does serious damage. This is why sex was meant for a man and a woman in a lifelong relationship. Otherwise, it erodes a person's self-worth. Listen to another woman named Nancy. She says, "When I had sex, I was so locked up emotionally, not being personally involved in all, that I couldn't really enjoy it. Maybe there'd be some tenderness afterward, but usually I was so out of it, I didn't know or cared if there was. Maybe I was afraid to care. Sometimes I'd think I was in love, but then I'd never hear from him again. They were just a piece of meat, I'd tell myself. I'd laugh it off. But inside I knew that I was the piece of meat. And I was dying. I loved life, but I hated myself. I loved men, but never any particular one, because I couldn't trust them. I loved sex, but I never enjoyed it. That is, I was never really fulfilled. I was hungry, but never filled. I never understood any of it, and I couldn't stop. The weekend came, and I was back on the roller coaster." Hey, here is the non-politically correct truth. If you're a Christian, your body no longer belongs to you. It's been bought with a price. Your body belongs to Jesus. And if you give your body to someone without a promise from them and a blessing from God, it not only grieves God's heart, it cheapens and degrades you in your own eyes. You do get reduced to a piece of meat. You see, our culture today is so confused about sex and love. People believe that they're one and the same. Folks even refer to sex as making love. But sex may have nothing to do with love. Two stray dogs meet in an alley and they like each other enough to have sex. But that's not love. And just because you love a person doesn't mean you should have sex with them. Love respects and looks out for the other person's highest good. It never dishonors or dirties or defiles the person it loves. It insists on God's best. Let me say, just because modern society scoffs at what it calls the Bible's puritanical and old-fashioned and outdated views of sex, let me ask, how is society doing these days? I mean, what kind of sexual landscape has been produced by our liberated attitudes? Do you think folks are more fulfilled today? Do you think there's less hurt and broken lives? Do you see an upswing in self-esteem and self-worth? Or has the sexual revolution produced a whole population of depressed and deflated people, as well as an explosion of STDs and deviant behavior, and a degrading of women and unwanted pregnancies, and an epidemic number of single parents struggling to get by alone? You see, here's the Bible's ethos on sex. Walk in love, not lust. And are you really saying we'd be worse off if we did? Understand, real love is grounded in faith. I'll obey God and I'll trust Him to take care of me and my needs. Single Christians today, they act desperate. They think that if they don't advertise and prove their prowess and try on a few people, life and love will pass them by. Well, where's your faith? Where's your trust in God? When Elizabeth Elliot was a single Christian, she decided to honor the Bible's standard for sex and trust God with her personal needs for family and for love. She wrote later, "I took for granted that there must be a few men left who had the strength to swim against the tide. I assumed that those men would also be looking for women of principle. I did not want to be among the marked down goods on the bargain table, cheap because they had been pawed over. Crowds collect there. It's only the few who will pay full price." And God blessed Elizabeth with a godly husband. And trust me, God will bless you if you seek to do things God's way. Understand, the Christian view of sexual intimacy is the most exalted of any religion or culture in the world. Christianity's sexual ethos sets a high standard. And here's the reason. A Christian is to walk in love. And we understand that love is giving and offering and sacrificing. Oh, the world walks in lust, but the Christian walks in love. Listen to verse 3 in the New International Version. I think it says it well. But among you there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality or of any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. Once Alexander the Great was reviewing his troops after a battle, and he came across a man who'd been disciplined for cowardice. He asked the man his name. The soldier answered, Alexander. Alexander the Great replied, "What did you say?" The soldier said, "Alexander, sir." Well, the general went into a rage. He and a coward had the same name. And that's when Alexander the Great ordered, "Soldier, either change your ways or change your name." And if you're living in sexual sin while still calling yourself a Christian, I would issue the same challenge to you. Either change your name or change your ways. Imitating God and walking in love will steer clear of impure deeds, but it will also avoid impure dialogue. Paul writes in verse 4 that neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. See, certain forms of humor, certain kinds of jokes are not appropriate for the child of God. Filthiness and foolish talking aren't hard to figure out, but coarse jesting is an interesting phrase. This Greek word translated jesting, it means to turn. This is turning a conversation in an evil direction. Here's a person who makes sexually suggestive remarks, who makes leading innuendos, who takes your innocent comment and then twists it in a salacious way. You've heard this done. You see, a coarse jester has a quick wit tied to a promiscuous heart. You can tell a lot about a person by what makes them laugh. Hey, your pastor of all people enjoys a good joke. Matter of fact, I enjoy a bad joke or really enjoy a corny joke. But I draw the line at dirty jokes. I mean, do you chuckle when you hear off-color humor? Tomorrow, when you hear it, and you will, why don't you excuse yourself? Why don't you find some work to do and walk away? You don't have to be self-righteous about it. Walk in love, even to the guy who's telling the joke. Just don't indulge yourself in evil. For as a child of God, we were born into love, not lust. Never forget, we're in a spiritual battle. It's a fight with temptation. And our strategy should be to keep the war as far away from the home front as possible. You know, it's bad enough if our enemy is in North Korea, or if he's in the mountains of Afghanistan, but you certainly don't want the combatants parked off the Carolina coast. You want to keep the fighting as far as possible from what's most vital to you. And the same is true spiritually. You see, sin is fought on multiple fronts. Before sin grows into a destructive habit, it was a single deed that I tried. Before that deed, it was an attitude that I developed. Before it was an attitude, it was a desire that I nurtured. Before that desire started, it was a thought that I entertained. And that thought was planted by a picture that I saw. And I saw that picture in a place that I went. And I visited that place with a friend that I chose. And you see, here's the battle strategy. Make good choices before the sin snowballs. Choose the right friends. Avoid the wrong places. Do the battle in the theater of your mind. Don't wait until your sin grows momentum and lodges in your heart and then threatens your marriage and wrecks your home and siphons off your riches and ruins your health. Here's another way to put it. Keep your hands out of the cookie jar. the surest way to resist a forbidden cookie is to never put your hand near the cookie jar. And yet, here's what Christians do. We see the cookies. We remember we used to like cookies. We think we might enjoy a cookie again. And so we unscrew the lid and we stick our hand in the cookie jar and then we pray, God, deliver me from cookies. Well, I suppose 99% of the time, I've never done exact research on this, but I suppose that 99.9% of the time, if your hand goes into the cookie jar, it'll probably come out with a cookie. This is why if you're serious about overcoming sin and walking in love, you'll keep your hand as far as possible from the cookie jar. Be a stranger to danger. And this is why verse 4 is so important. How we walk and what makes us think, what makes us laugh, and how we talk. Even if I have no thoughts of doing the deed, do you realize that if Satan gets me talking about it and joking about it and laughing about it, then he's cutting down my distance from it? He's actually eliminating my buffer? You know how this works. You and your spouse have never mentioned that you'd like a new car. But once you verbalize it, man, that desire, it picks up steam. All of a sudden, it takes a giant leap toward reality just by talking about it. Now that's all you want to talk about is what model and what color and what extras. And this is what happens when we joke and when we laugh about evil. When we entertain ourselves with it, without knowing it, we're inching closer to the edge. We're putting ourselves on the verge. Oh, you've never thought of cheating on your husband, but you've watched it done on television, and you've empathized with its participants, and slowly, it's broken down your sensibilities. Oh, it amazes me. The companies that spend $4 million for a 30-second ad on the Super Bowl, they'll turn around and they'll deny that violent and sensual programming has any effect on a viewer's behavior. Well, why do they spend the money on the ad? What entertains us shapes us. It does. Don't be deceived. Proverbs 23, verse 7 tells us, "For as he thinks in his heart, so is he." We are influenced by stuff we consume. And over time, we get sucked in. We end up imitating the world rather than imitating God. And this is more dangerous than we think. For Paul writes in verse 5, "For this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words." Here Paul mentions three people that no matter what these people say, they are not headed to heaven. They claim to be Christians, but over time, neither of the three are capable of restraint. It's obvious that they lack the conviction and the power and the life of God's Spirit inside them. Their lives are completely out of control. For the fornicator, the issue is sex. For the unclean person, it's deviant thoughts. For the covetous man, it's money. And often these three people are one and the same. It's all about him, his glands, and his perspective and his wallet. This is a person void of any moral principles. And it's not just a moral problem, it's a spiritual one as well. For notice how Paul refers to this person. He calls him an idolater. You know, many of today's Americans would never bow before a statue or a trinket, but they worship sex or things or money or even personal autonomy. When you value something supremely at all costs, it does become an idol. When it, whatever it is, becomes more valuable to you than your wife and your family and your church and your integrity and your faith and your God and even heaven and hell, then it has replaced the true God as your new God. Reminds me of the young businessman who flipped his car over guardrail, rolled it down a steep embankment. The twisted metal actually severed off his arm. When the hero units reached him, the guy kept whining, "Oh, my Lamborghini." Oh, my Lamborghini. The attending paramedics, they were appalled that this man was so materialistic that all he could think about was his car. One of the EMTs, he kind of lost patience, and he told him, he said, buddy, you got a lot more to worry about than your silly car. Your arm was chopped off. The man suddenly gets this panicked look on his face, and he starts crying, oh, my Rolex. Oh, my Rolex. Here's a person that has made wealth his idol. Years ago, there was a popular rap song with the lyrics, boys want sex and girls want money. And that's true of millions of people in our culture. Getting her to bed and getting us ahead is what life is all about. Hey, such a person is imitating their God. But their God is not the Christian God. For Christ is about love, not lust. And thus the fornicator and the unclean person and the covetous or the greedy is an idolater, not a Christian. Again, verse 6 tells us, let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Hey, there are people who deceive and have been deceived by empty words. My former church that I attended, we counted, quote, professions of faith. They knew exactly how many folks had mouthed an allegiance to Jesus. But you see, it's not a profession that saves us. It's a possession. Is your faith more than words? It needs to be. See, here's the question I know some of you are asking. Pastor Sandy, are you saying that a Christian will never struggle with sexual sin or uncleanness or greediness? If so, man, I'm in real trouble. Well, let me be clear. That is not what I'm saying. Christians aren't perfect, and we can be lured into sin. We are vulnerable to temptation. The operative word here, though, is struggle. Are you struggling? I mean, a Christian will struggle with these sins. In fact, that's one of the evidences that proves they're a Christian. There's a struggle. There's something inside them that's pushing them to fight the temptation and to pursue victory. They don't just capitulate and cave in. See, it's the person who doesn't care at all about what they do and who they hurt. The person who has no desire to walk in love. This is the person who has no inheritance in the kingdom. As I've often said, real faith leaves tracks. There'll be a marked evidence of your faith in how you live your life. See, if a bomb went off in this room, later, I'd be able to prove it. I'd be able to walk you back in here and show you the crater that it left behind. And in the same way, when grace explodes in a person's heart, it changes the terrain and it carves out a new character. There's evidence of its impact. I like the statement, Christians aren't sinless, but as they grow, they will sin less and less and less. Verse 7 wraps up Paul's talk on our walk in love. He writes, therefore, do not be partakers with them. He comes back to his original idea. Be imitators of God, not imitators of the wickedness in this world. You see, as children of God, we need to learn to love. Jesus has loved us, and we're called to love others. Real love is more than an agitated state of psychological arousal. It gives, and it offers, and it sacrifices. And we need to be people who do the same. We need to walk in love. And as we do, we need to avoid love's counterfeit. Those 50 shades of gray that we refer to as lust. We need to keep the war far away from the home front as possible. We need to keep our hand out of the cookie jar. We need to make sure that our faith is real. And that we walk in love.
That concludes the teaching portion of today's broadcast with Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Join us next time as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the book of Ephesians. You can learn a great deal about Pastor Sandy by visiting our website. The web address is sandyadams.org. That's sandyadams.org. Simply click on the radio program option from the main menu. When you click on the radio program option at sandyadams.org, you'll find today's message and many others from Pastor Sandy. You can download today's teaching, listen again, subscribe to the podcast, or browse the archive of messages. If you live in the Stone Mountain, Georgia area or will be passing through, you can get directions and the times of our services at our website, www.sandyadams.org. We love hearing how God's Word touches the lives of His followers. So please log on to sandyadams.org and click on the Contact Us link and send us a note about how today's message has encouraged you. Your feedback helps us tremendously. Once again, you've been listening to the Daily Bible Teaching Program of Pastor Sandy Adams. Please tune in next time as we continue through the book of Ephesians. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.